Football is a simple game. 22 men chase the ball for 90 minutes, and at the end, the Germans go out of the group stage. Hello, and welcome to episode 16 of Same Old Wombles. Same Old Wombles is brought to us by, what to you even, by some of us who put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated and non-partisan. We're the Same Old Wombles. 16 Candles is a racy, drunken, hilarious 1980s high school comedy, but it does also contain sexism, potential date rape, nudity, swearing, and racism. My name is Mark Lewis, new Don's Trust board member, but don't believe the hype. Tonight's panel features Adam Proctor, Niall Cooper, and Alex Folks. A big welcome to Martin Drake joining us for the first time, and an extra special welcome to our special guest for the evening, the new managing director of the football club, Danny Macklin. He's making a list, he's checking it twice, and he's going to find out who's naughty and nice. Welcome to episode 16.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Just in the absence of my brother Mark, where the hell do you come up with that utter nonsense? Just like, and you're supposed to be representing the future of the Don's Trust board, and you have referenced 16 Candles and gone with like a whole range of things that are just fundamentally wrong with the club. All those people who voted for Mark, what the hell did you do? Unbelievable. Anyway, commiserations also to Adam, who didn't quite make it. Clearly, Adam would not have come up with an intro quite as insane and obscene as that, Mark. But well done anyway, all the same.
It's known as, I used to put some intros about you guys and then people sensibly complained. So now I'm just trying to make a theme that is relevant to the number of the episode that we are doing. So that's why I came out with 16. That's all it is.
Arts on the Coast Squad for number 17 next week. So we'll help you there, Mark, later on.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Heaven 17, just 17. Answers on the postcard. Anyway, much Danny, more importantly...
Danny, you can jump at any point here as a special guest to tell him to shut up or talk any other nonsense, any other random thing you could possibly think out with 17, just because, you know, Mark's Mark.
And he's, Alex... He's 17. It was the only thing that came to my mind. It's Christmas, after all.
That's very good. Stay another day, Danny. Well, we hope you stay a lot longer than one more day.
Oh, dear.
Back to winning ways on Saturday. Danny had loads more going on Saturday. And in fact, we're very grateful for Danny joining us because between Saturday and now, Danny's done sleeping out on the big sleep out two for the Don's local action group. And then I believe joined in with the Johnny Don's Christmas party and then hosted a yet another successful England game at the club. So well done you. And I'm surprised, Danny, that you were able to keep your eyes open still.
Yeah, it was a long sort of 36 hours, but made a lot easier with what we were raising money for, and the win certainly helped pass the early hours of yesterday morning.
Fabulous. So how happy are we with the win, or how appalled should we be with Harry Pell's behaviour?
I like it. I like this shithousery. I mean, we hate it when other clubs do it to us, but... You know, I'm taken back to that bit a few games ago where Josh Davidson, when the opposition was lining up a wall and he got between the wall and the keeper was trying to direct the wall and he was busy bouncing around between the keeper and the wall and just being pathetically silly and childish. And, you know, if we'd seen an opposition player doing that, we'd be all over them. But it's our players, so we love it. And there's been maybe not something quite as blatant as that since then, but there's been all sorts of decent time wasting. And fundamentally, we haven't come a cropper doing it. We haven't had any silly yellow cards doing it, maybe because the Yuba Sal doesn't get involved. But it's been fun. And the match on Saturday was freezing cold, and I have huge respect for all those who slept out. But you know, it was another win. It was a solid 1-0 against a team who brought proper fans and who made a really good game of it. So I'm really happy.
Just on that, Alex, very quickly, right? I was just wondering, because I didn't see it, but it must happen at some point when Tyson Fury did come onto the pitch and lamp Harry Pell, because he went down pretty well. I didn't see him come onto the pitch. Did you see him, Alex, at any point? I must have missed that.
You were up in the posh seats for that bit, so I'm sure you didn't see it. But you know, the keeper had the ball, and Harry gave him a little nudge, and then the keeper nudged back somewhat harder, and Harry fell, as you say, as if he'd been punched by Tyson Fury. To be honest, you know, all the home fans made a huge amount of it. I'm not surprised at the outcome, a yellow for Harry. It's just one of those things you do in football, isn't it? It's one of those things that the Osopo commentators say, this is not what we like to see in football. But you know what? It is. It's exactly what we want to see in football. We want to get angry. We want to get upset, but we want to do so when our team's winning. So, no, all fair play to him. You know, it's a yellow card. It shouldn't have happened, but we've had far worse this season and we'll have far worse in the future. So, you know, let's just get on with it.
Yeah, I was going to say my tolerance for gamesmanship is probably lower than everyone else's, for sure. But, you know, I actually thought that the goalie was going to get a yellow card in that incident. I was watching it on iFollow and I felt that he overreacted to what was clearly just kind of intimidation. But then, of course, Pell made a bigger deal of it potentially than it was, which maybe actually played against his favour. And I think, thankfully, yeah, we need to be careful because we don't want to come unstuck by doing things like gamesmanship, etc. And we have in the past where we've tried to out, you know, run a game to the end of time and it's caused us more trouble than it was worth. So, you know, I think it's a balance. I'm less impressed, but, you know, yeah. We've talked about silly. I do think there was a bit of a silly yellow in that sense, but I think that's probably because of the overacting involved. If he'd just fallen over, which he was pushed, then maybe it would have gone the other way potentially, so.
For Danny's benefit, all of us are old enough to know some very old school Wimbledon stuff from back in the 80s and the 90s, when people like Nico Klassen, then at Tottenham, went down like an absolute ton of bricks when the ball was gently bounced to him by Brian Gale. The referee then proceeded to send off, I think, Dennis Wise, mistaken identity, long before VAR, so I don't know what quite happened there. And also, our lovely, beloved Vinnie Jones did basically exactly what their goalkeeper did to Harry on Saturday, i.e. very, very little, towards Kevin Ratcliffe, who was then captain of Wales and Everton, who went down like a ton of bricks and got Vinnie sent off. So that's why there's a bit of retribution, so to speak.
So obviously, Danny, what's your spin on it?
Enjoyable 1-0 win. Good team perfect performance.
Perfect diplomat.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because in the context of these games, these sort of League Two hard-fought games, sometimes you need to break the play out like that. I mean, it's not great, but it got them thinking about something else. It wasted a few minutes. It's not nice, but we've had it done to us by Stevenage and Wickham and people for years. So I'm not saying I want to copy them, but, you know, that's what you need to win sometimes.
Yeah, and I was going to say the other thing that I felt when watching it on iFollow, because of stupid moving of the kickoff time meant that I didn't want to get a train, etc., was that Grimsby were way more aggressive throughout the entirety of the game, on and off the play, in lots of ways. I felt that actually there probably should have been way more cards dished out in different ways, or at least some sort of the referee needs to take a bit more control. So, yeah, as much as some people were complaining about that one thing, I think actually, if you look overall, our overall play was way more sportsmanlike than the other 11. So,
I'm not going to knock the referee on Saturday. I thought he was one of the better ones. And letting the play flow, even to the extent of ignoring a few bits and pieces, was probably the right thing to do. The only other comment I want to make on the game on Saturday, apart from, again, congratulating the team on the win, was just to wish well to the Grimsby player who got stretchered off. I mean, that looked like a horrific injury. I mean, I can't see why it happened, because he should have been able to get his arm down to be able to protect himself a bit better. But, you know, as soon as he landed on his neck, we knew it was he was in some sort of trouble. So I don't know if anybody's got an update on him. You know, we saw the thing straight after the game saying he was conscious and talking and everything. But, you know, it's very worrying to see somebody carted off a pitch on a stretcher when there's obviously a serious injury.
Yeah, thankfully he was released from hospital. It looked horrific, didn't it? As always these things do, because they're, yeah, rightly very precautionary with it. But yeah, we sent our regards onto his players and board. And yeah, thankfully it was good news that came out of the nearby hospital.
Yeah, Danny, one thing someone did mention on Saturday, might have been Alex actually, is it took a while to get the stretcher out, it seemed to. And it was also full of water or something, because I'm not sure where it stood. So I don't know if that's something we need to look at, or it's part of the first aid team or something. But someone said we should get a stretcher out soon, you know, and a brace. But
I do a sort of list on my phone of bits. So it might be that there's litter here, or there wasn't a sign up there. That was one of the things I added. So we always do a post one. Now we do a post game review at the same time as we do the sort of preparation for the next one. So that, yeah, that is on the list of how we can, if needed, sharpen that up.
I told you he's making a list. He's checking it twice. I've seen him making the list, actually. It's very, very, very informative and useful.
Do you want final to thing wanted to add about?
Hopefully, I'm not on the list.
No, that was one of the things when I was watching it on iFollow. That was one of the first things I thought was, like, I hope these guys really know where the stretcher is. And it didn't seem that long when I was watching it on iFollow, but it was the first thought that came to mind, because I've been a first aider at university at various points, and of course, you know, these kind of things you remember and you get trained once, and then you do, when the situation arises, which is very rare, it's that kind of like, oh my word, how are we going to find things? So yeah. But I thought, to be honest, again, I felt the fact that both sets of medics were helping with the situation, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it was one of those things where I didn't want to rewind it on iFollow, because he did fall really badly, you know, and it was like, oh, crumbs, you know. So yeah, I thought it was very well handled in general.
Just to quickly wrap up on Grimsby, I just wanted to give a shout out to all their supporters overall. I was selling programmes down at the away end, and we were a bit short-staffed. I was on my own, but it didn't really matter. They were really friendly, really welcoming. We had some new stewards down there as well, who were really friendly and really welcoming as well, made for a really good atmosphere. A lot of people had made a long journey, but they were just friendly, bit of banter, a bit of just general old-school cheering, and exactly what you'd want from supporters of all different age groups and so on and so forth, who clearly follow their team around the country. I saw a few of them after the game as well. They had no hard feelings. There was no issues or recrimination or anything else. And actually, I'd never really had any engagement with Grimsby as a club before. So it made me want to think, if I possibly can do that, going to the away game there at the end of the season, which I think is Maybank holiday weekend, if I can do that, that would be a good thing to do. Anyway, we didn't get Danny on to talk about fish and chips and how lovely Grimsby are as a club. We actually got him on to talk about any number of different issues. And all of us are going to chip in, I'm sure, and have different ideas and opinions. I'll just start off very generally, hopefully very gently, and ask Danny, and forgive me if you've already sort of talked about this in different areas and different places before, but you've been at Leyton Orient, you've been obviously at Essex County Cricket Club, you've been at Southend. Why Wimbledon?
Yeah, very good question. So I did 5 years as CEO at Leyton Orient. When I joined, they were 20th in the National League. And obviously, you can see where they are now. That's not down to me. But it's, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. Left after a notice period in March to set up a agency called Synonymous, which was a sports partnership agency. Was loving it, doing very, very well, and it continues to flourish. And saw this advertised, spoke to a few people who shall name nameless, but one of them is called Noel Cooper. Regarding the role, he obviously spoke very fondly of the club. I've known Noel for a while now through Fair Game and other initiatives as well. And through speaking to Noel and others, I realised the knowledge that I had of the club and the sort of affection that I had for it, for everything it had been through and that it was going through, and what it stood for in the community, was something I wanted to be a real part of. Did the interview process, thought long and hard about it, because, you know, there was the, you know, living in Essex, it was obviously a real consideration, but it wasn't really a consideration as soon as I'd sort of met Mick and the rest of the board and a few staff members, and was chomping at the bit during my notice period to really sort of get my teeth stuck into it. This club is something else. It's truly unique. And it's now about us writing the next chapter that we can look back in 10, 20 years' time, 50 years' time and go, yeah, do you know what? We're as proud of that as we have been on other elements down the years.
Fabulous. Great to hear. I mean, obviously, we all believe we're unique. And if you added up the number of years from the supporters just here on the pod, then that's probably pushing something close to 100 or something ridiculous. I'm always curious as to what impression there is out there in the non-Wimbledon world. People who haven't been touched by us, so to speak. You know, are people jealous? Are people curious? Are they thinking it's utterly delusional to have done what we've done?
I think when I did a lot of research, asked a lot of friends, asked a lot of randomers in the streets. So when I went in the year three process, I was sort of asking people walking their dogs, people in shops, pubs, I did a lot of the pubs, to basically ask that question of, you know, what's your impression? And I was asking that sort of up and down the country. And you really get a mixed answer. There was those that, you know, are they still non-league? Are they still playing at Selhurst? Didn't they move up the M1? That was a short, sharp answer. I'll go back to that one. But, you know, there was a real mixture of answers there, including from local residents, like, have they moved back to Plough Lane? I heard they were going to do it. And I'm like, well, yeah, they have. So to me, that just shows we've done an awful lot to tell the story, but I've got to tell that story locally, nationally and internationally to a far bigger, more diverse audience.
Okay, I'm going to ask one more and then I'll let other people talk, unlike me. So I believe you've been in the job all of about a month or so. What would you say is the thing that surprised you the most?
I think the real, and it sounds like a corny answer, but it is just generally the volunteerism, I hate that phrase, but just that the culture of wanting to help, whether that's distributing a flyer or helping with legal advice. It's fascinating, fantastic, and a real phenomenon that people would do that, because this is, you know, your club, so perhaps I shouldn't be surprised, but the scale of what it is on and the appetite to genuinely help, it's not just to sort of come in and for the chance to meet a player, it's to genuinely help on some very often mundane things that collectively those 0.1% are what make AFC Wimbledon what it is and what it can be.
Okay, who wants to jump in? Otherwise, I could ask loads of questions, but I'm sure other people want to listen, not just to me and Danny.
Yeah, just on the same point as that, really, Danny, is what's interesting is we've always had this issue where, because we're set up by volunteers and set up, you know, with us running the club, literally, we've found it really hard to step back and hand over more and more of the roles to professionals like you, basically. And so I think we still have an issue where, because we have so many volunteers across so many industries, finance, whatever, people feel I could do that really well if I had the time. And I think the person who's in place, who's going to be very good, may not be as good as me, but I haven't got the time. So I don't know how we manage that going forward. We're going to have to get more and more professional as we really improve the stadium and make it work. I don't know how you think we can do that, because we want to keep the volunteers useful, but there is a limit to what they can do, you know, day to day, you know, cleaning a stadium, that sort of stuff. So I don't know. It's probably the biggest thing I would say we've got as our club in our context. Most clubs haven't got that situation.
Yeah, I think it's a good question, Martin. We've got, yeah, we obviously have a real skill set within the staff. There are a couple of holes that we need to fill in certain operational and sort of money-making areas. But in the main, they're there. I think it's basically making sure that we bring the volunteers into planning, into discussion where feasible. I don't just mean, you know, have 500 people involved in it, but use those skill sets where relevant. We've got danger of having sort of too many voices, because that can be such a thing as when you're looking at strategy, because no one will have the same strategy as the next person. But I think it's the communication of why we're doing things rather than the who's doing it, etc. I think it's explaining the why first off and why now, and just listening to feedback. We won't always get it right, but you know, involving the experts where we need to, and using volunteers to make the match day experience I've said to Niall in a meeting I had with him recently, I want to make the match day experience the best in this country. We're a long way off that, but we're on the journey to make it happen.
Well, it's noticeably improved, actually, just in the month you've been here, to be fair, the actual experience from my personal point of view. So thank you for that. But yeah, I think your point is really good about that. It's how we manage that moving forward. What do we do if, we previously had an emergency and got volunteers to sort it out. We've now got to make sure that there are people there to cover all these things that come up, whether it's registrations or a problem with the ground. So I just think I'm wary we're moving slowly over to that. So from your point of view, I mean, you must have seen this at other clubs, and it's often thrown at us when, you know, we're run by fans, or people think we're all run by fans and not have full-time paid employees. If it was just one businessman making all the choices, it'd be much easier, because as you said, there's not too many voices, just his voice. So what's your experience at other clubs? Have you had to work under someone like that and deal with that? Or is it worse when more people have their opinion?
I think it's about taking opinions on board. You'll get a diverse of one thing, one will say one, and one the polar opposite. But it's taking those opinions and being brave with your own thought process as well, and thinking, you know what, I think this is the right thing to do, and being willing to adapt and learn from that. But, you know, I've worked under, you know, clubs that have, you know, just the board involved and perhaps one fan representative sitting outside, and now work under and embrace the model that we are under here at AFC Wimbledon, and say it's an asset, and it's one that as a club and as a managing director I've got to make sure we fully utilise in the right way. I think what we're looking at is the appointment of a sort of volunteer champion, someone that can truly at any stage I can go to and say, right, we've got this issue with, you know, design of the third floor, let's speak to an architect. This guy here is qualified, he's got 25 years, diehard fan, would love to give some of his time. Likewise, we've got a problem with this contract over here to do with this. You know, for example, the issue we've got with retail at the moment and our kit supplier, so to speak. We're speaking to a volunteer who's run more retail shops than I've had hot pies. So it's that's where you, knowing that resource and why a volunteer champion is so important, to always tap into, for want of a better phrase, that database.
We've seen a load of almost instant changes and instant results since you come in, almost all of them for the better. One of the ones, and I don't know how much you can talk about this, but one of the most impactful ones has been the change in stewarding company. How difficult a decision was that to take?
Easy and difficult. There was an incident that happened in that game that required us to deal with it quickly. I don't let things fester. Made the decision that night, slept on it, made the same decision the following morning. And yeah, we had to move on and part ways, which was a shame, because in the main they provided a good service. But yeah, that's not the representation I want of a club that I'm MD of.
In a similar vein, there's been a lot of comments, complaints, if you like, about another aspect of the club, and that's the concession on the main fan concourse. The slow queues, the reports, and I can't put it higher than that because I haven't experienced it myself, of staff offering discounts for cash. The general lack of knowledge that people, when they want a beer, they want it quickly because they've got a game to get back to, or they've got to get it down within half time or something like that. Is that something you're able to talk about?
Yeah, so I want to make some radical overhauls. They're not going to happen overnight. The catering units are, the concourse is actually clearly really wide. Sorry, long, but not very deep. Then that doesn't open up, but you work with what you've got. We've simplified the ranges. We'll be bringing in new product ranges. I want to try and separate the drink sales from the food sales, for obvious reasons. Majority of people just want a drink, whether that be cold or hot. On Saturday, those in the stand would have seen, and the cup of stand would have had in, we had a trial of a unit that had three different types of drink, and I was alleged to believe that was popular and the trial was successful. So we'll see if we can afford to roll that out into there and into other areas. So that was serving three different, an ale, a lager and a Guinness. And even the Guinness to me looks like a pint that if I wasn't working would have drunk. So for me, it's just looking at ways that we can speed up service. But then on the other hand, I want to be able to put stadium TV in, which I'm determined to do for next season. So if Niall goes to get a round of drinks in, probably the stadium will sort of, you know,
let me stop you there. Niall will never get a round of drinks in. But
in that scenario on. That everyone stands and claps, but the old general part, we want Niall to be able to come up and not miss a minute of the action. So I want to be able to show the game, you know, maybe with a 1 or 2 second delay, but not a 30-second delay like you get on the stream, to see that, to see the action almost live. And if he does have to go up and get a pint for everyone, then at least he's not missing much of the football before he gets the cobwebs out of his wallet.
Okay, that's cool. The other problem we saw on Saturday, and this might well have been something to do with the early kickoff, as I was coming into the ground, I was running late. I'm normally in the ground quite early, but on this occasion I was late, and the queues outside, particularly to get into the rye stand and the movers stand, were really horrendous. And you could see the game started and people were trickling in up to 20, 25 minutes afterwards. And those weren't people who had turned up that late. These were people who had just been standing in the queue.
Yep.
Do you think that was a one-off? Have you identified why that might have been?
I identified the issue a couple of weeks ago. It fixed, came back. And as always on these things, of course, it works. And then you know the day before it doesn't. So there's a part of the problem is we've got two companies that are involved in it, a company that installed it, a company that are responsible for maintaining it. That is what it is. So today we had them come in. We instructed that at 3:05 on Saturday for them to come early this morning. They came, spent a day on the site, and their chief engineer of it couldn't find the problem, which is a concern. So we're now speaking to the higher up levels, and that's first prompt of call tomorrow morning is how we fix it. We've got a temporary solution if needed, but I want the gates to work, and just having one of the gates down in gate three causes a lot of rush. Now, obviously, there were people that turned up late because we had the early kickoff, so that didn't help. But ultimately, when you're 50% of your turnstile down on that corner, you're going to have 100% of the people in one queue. So it's not a surprise. We're trying to move people to other turnstiles, and there is a lot of people not wanting to do that for various reasons. That that's the gate I go into. I'm meeting Bob or Mary there, and they won't go round. So we're trying to educate that going round will actually get you in quicker. But first and foremost, we need to have both turnstiles working, and where we get really busy, to use the handheld scanners and then put people in having been scanned through the other gate.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. And finally from me, you've talked about volunteering. We've got this culture of we're a volunteer, a fan-led club, fan-owned club, with lots of volunteers involved. I'm personally surprised a lot more lower league teams don't have more volunteers involved. What, apart from love of the club, have you thought about what the club can give back to those volunteers? Is there any program that's either in place or that you think could be put in place to reward volunteering, whether it be somebody who's giving one-off expertise, as you talked about, an architect or so on, or somebody who volunteers by selling golden goals week in, week out for a whole season? Is there something we can do as a club that wouldn't bankrupt us, that fits within our financial plan, but that we can give back to volunteers?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of small things. So we obviously have to make sure we don't breach the very strong and quite stringent HMRC volunteering act of whatever law that was. I won't try and pretend it. But there's a number of things obviously we're looking at doing where we do the away volunteer day. We've allowed volunteers to be able to also apply alongside a season card holder for a certain game. To clarify, if you were a certain season card holder and a volunteer, you wouldn't have been able to do both. And it's little things like there should be a pin badge or something or some recognition. We're looking at ways to write to our volunteers over Christmas period as a thank you, and to do that regularly throughout the season. I think a thanks goes a long way, whether that's from me, from Mick, from Johnny, from Alex Woodyard, whatever it is, you know, we're all really grateful. We just need to constantly remind ourselves of the work that volunteers do across the club.
Just Alex, can I jump in on that? Because through Fair Game, there's the coalition of the clubs have got to deal with the skills network, which is designed to help staff and volunteers of all the fair game clubs. We can only do that because we're a collective group. So, and that offers 48 nationally accredited training courses for all staff and volunteers. So Wish have already begun to look at it. I know the foundation have. It's with Anita, Danny as well. So that's an opportunity for any volunteer to get things like business administration, digital marketing, safeguarding, all these sort of training courses, which certainly the Wish have been very proactive in already pushing out amongst their volunteers. But that's only because they're connected with the Wimbledon umbrella. So that's something that I would hope that we can start offering more out as we go forward. So that's a definite positive thing. Picking up on that, Danny, you talked about a volunteer champion. Would that effectively be a paid role or an existing staff take on that idea of being something to kind of make sure that volunteers are, you know, kind of properly have a proper kind of central point where they can really feel they fit into the club and we can use that skill set that sits amongst our fan base in a more effective way?
Yeah, my fit somewhere in between it being a paid role and a volunteer without, again, breaching any rules. But at the moment, I'm open to suggestions. I think it's ultimately going to be the right personality. It's going to need to be someone that knows the fan base as best they can and, you know, keeps that list to say, right, this person is, you know, they're saying they're an expert in this, but realistically, they haven't worked in 40 years and et cetera. I think it's just almost like a cross-check. There's a couple I've had say they'll volunteer in it and their expertise is nowhere near what they're actually saying it is in that field.
Yeah, I mean, there was Xavier Wiggins is probably another person to speak to because he was starting to set up some of that work from before on looking at that mapping exercise. So that we did through with DLAG start setting up a database of fans, and we put some of the stuff through what was called Don's Maker. So that there is the kind of early infrastructure there, but we probably need to just take it to another level. Probably a conversation to have outside this for all you very bored now, same old Wombles listeners listening to me rabbit on for far too long, as I always do.
No, that's the podcast. No, we wait until you start and then we have to sit back until you finish. So that's kind of normal. So I'm gonna ask my questions now that I've listed. No, Danny, thanks so much. I mean, it probably feels like a bit of a grilling and we did all sort of brief each other to make it as fun as possible. And I kind of feel like we're steering away from the fun. But I've got to admit, so I'm going to say a couple of things in general and then I've got some questions that I just would like to know a bit more about and they're probably pretty silly. But in terms of the thing with the volunteers, the great thing about that in terms of turning it into what could be called gamification, which I could talk for another 2 hours on, and its negatives, is that we have a great volunteer base and, you know, just by simply rewarding them, I don't even think it's going to encourage more volunteering. It's just going to be a nice thing to do. So, you know, and the pin badges, all that kind of stuff, we've seen them. We used to have tables of them at King's Meadow. People go mad for those things, so that's cool. Also, my card for season ticket, for the whole season, it only failed once at the last game. And the only thing I found for that was that the people on the turnstile didn't understand what to do when it failed. So mine, my dad's and my daughter's, they were unsure and they didn't have hand scanners. And so they were unsure what to do. And I said, look, we come every game. You know, it's a real ticket. We're not mucking around. And they just let us in through the door. So I guess you understand how that's...
Yeah, and that's down to having the change in the steward in. We need more in-house stewards, which we're going on a recruitment drive in the next sort of 3 to 4 weeks, early new year, because you need continuity in your staffing in the same areas because they get to firefight issues and deal with them straight away.
No, cool. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And it's a similar sort of thing where some stewards didn't know where seats were for some visitors. And I tried to helpfully point them into the right direction. But of course, I felt the stewards should know that piece of information and not rely on the fact that I was walking past them. But
yeah,
it's all sort of changed. So I guess my first question is about the USP of the club. You know, I think obviously you've talked a bit about the USP. You've obviously talked on this podcast and other ones about your interest in pubs and beers and all that kind of stuff, and of course I'm a big craft beer fan, as everyone here knows, and so I think there's opportunities to tap into companies that are looking to be different. So BrewDog in terms of a beer company would be obvious in terms of the fact that they plant trees with certain products they sell and they try to ensure they're their environmental impact is a lot lower. Companies like Lush, who maybe don't sponsor any football clubs, same sort of thing. And the reason that they are doing so well is that people see they care about not only the planet, but of course, generally people, because those two things come together. And so I was wondering if you could talk a bit about what you see as the potential for us to gain new sponsorship from places that maybe football hasn't done, and how that could impact our sort of global reach and also just our general community reach.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Basically, we want to amalgamate the story that we've had today, look at ways that we can become more environmentally sustainable, even more community diverse. You know, I'd love to be able to celebrate and say, 15% of our fan base are from XYZ communities, etc. That we're the most female friendly and most family friendly stadium in sport in this country. So we've got some ambitious targets to do that. In order to absolutely do that, we have to make sure that we're doing the things that appeal to them in the first place. And then we can then shout about those using, one of the ideas we're going to do is use local influencers. So if there might be a female football fan not thought about coming to play our lane, might live just around the corner. She might have a couple of 100,000 followers and wants to say that this is genuinely how a football club should treat women and don't patronise. They provide the facilities I expect, the drink and food range that I expect. And then the same with a group of families. So that's how we see one of the routes to growing that. And if we do that, we'll then appeal to sponsors to be able to say, look, we are genuinely doing everything we can from environmentally friendly. We will restart the process that we kickstarted with trying to get B Corp status, which obviously is a huge amount of work to do it. But boy, the rewards are there if you can get that and get that accredited. And to a sponsor, it was just a common thing you'd find when I was working in previous roles, is that ticks a lot of boxes. And it's a huge amount of work, but it'll be rewarded. So I think if we can get all of that recipe together, and tell the story of what Wimbledon is and was and will in the future be about, I think we'll open up the door to sponsors that perhaps don't know we're here now or think that we're too small. We're just a League Two club, but we're anything but. On the pitch right now, we might be a League Two club. Our ambitions aren't for that. And our ambitions off the pitch are to, if you put the community league table, our community is to get, could be in the Champions League of engagement and what we do. We've just got to make sure that we shout that bigger, prouder to more people.
No, brilliant. So that kind of follows up. That's great. Thanks, Danny. That really encourages me. So that kind of follows on to the next question I had, which is about AFC women. And in terms of the ability to play at Plough Lane, if we want to attract more women to come to the game, and we've seen with the national team, etc., this is a big, big growth area. And, lots of us here and lots of my friends, we have lots of, our daughters and whatever play in football and that kind of stuff. And of course, to see the women playing at Plough Lane would be massive. Now, my understanding is that there is a bit of a cost implication in housing the game. And so I guess, those two, maybe I'm answering the question, but let's hear what you have to say, because you've got way more experience on this than me. But I guess those two things are connected, in that if we want to attract more people to come to all of our games of different diversity, women, etc., that one of the things we should try and figure out is how do we get women playing all of their home games at Plough Lane as soon as possible. And what are the barriers to that, and how might we go about that? And I guess maybe again to ask you, why should we do that?
Yeah, first one is the finances is an element. Of course it is. We have to look at that for every bit of activity. And the second is the pitch. Now, I'm going to blow smoke until smoke can't be blown on Luke, who is our groundsman. He's a very young chap. Age should never come into it, but an exceptionally young chap to be head groundsman of a club of our size that has multi-sport on there with, obviously, the London Broncos. That pitch, whilst there's some wear and tear taking place over the main stand, as you would get at any football ground that has a big stand like that, you can notice that. But that pitch is in exceptionally good condition. We have to be mindful that in February, we have a long-standing agreement with London Broncos, and we'll be hosting play to the majority of their home fixtures. That commercially for the club not only puts us on a map to different audience, but also generates a sizable amount of profit contribution for that. So we are in that agreement, and we have to make sure we deliver on that agreement and deliver it well for those people that have effectively used the stadium for those games. We are committed to getting as many games on as we can and committed to doing four on it for this season. The way that the fixtures have worked out for the women's team, having spoken to Sophia, who's the general manager, have not been overly kind. They haven't got a home league game now until March time, which seems ludicrous. But we definitely want to put a couple of games on in the early spring, weather permitting at that stage. But that's the desire. And obviously we've got, again, weather permitting this weekend with the frozen conditions that we are expecting to do everything we can to get our game on against Gillingham Ladies in the FA Cup.
Yeah, just to say, Danny, are we limited to the number of matches we can host at Plough Lane under any sort of agreement with when we built it? Are we like limited to... So, no, I know that was the case at some of the grounds we shared at when we were... Obviously, Sellers Park and Kings Meadow, what Kings Meadow here?
Certainly, Fudley one. I don't know the figure off the top of my head. But how would they ever classify the games that aren't under floodlights? But that's... Yeah, we could hire that out for certain events, etc., which we do. You know, we might get a film inquiry that's worth a five-figure sum to us, and we have to review that against the balance of the wear on the pitch and etc. Some of these just literally turn up, hit a crossbar and go home, and you get £20,000 out of it. We have to balance all of those needs. Obviously, first team being the absolute priority. You've then got the academy that have requirements to play FA Youth Cup games, including Wednesdays against Orient.
Okay. Have we had any inquiries about people, you know, using it for concerts or something else?
Oh, yeah. We could... at Orient, we generated getting on for £200,000 a year profit just from pitch hires from those. And I think we're better placed in London than those guys are. We've got some, albeit very limited parking, great transport links, the history of it, etc. It's a market we should do, but that's not to say we're just going to go fill the... Yeah, with dirt bikes across the pitch. Nine times out of ten, this is literally just some football drills, and it's more using the stands than the seats. Yeah. So there is a market out there for filming of adverts and film releases, etc.
Yeah, and have we talked to a famous tennis club? Because I've been involved in that partly quite a long time in the past. But I know any sort of facilities anywhere near SW19 for 2 weeks in June, July.
Yeah,
like Goldust. So it's probably the time now to try and build that relationship. You probably have. I'm amazed if you haven't. But that's the sort of thing we could probably try and do now and build into it, so we know that they can, some other broadcasters and whatever, can use the facilities.
100%. Yeah. Work in progress.
Cool. I'm going to ask one more question. And I know you have mentioned it again on another podcast, the word esports. And I, of course, have mentioned it the last two times I've attempted to be elected on the Dons Trust board, because that's kind of my background. My background is not esports, but I working in games, I understand the huge draw that is. And I wondered, you know, when people talk about esports, they obviously talk about these big... No one else in the podcast is going to have a clue what I'm talking about. But anyway, League of Legends obviously is normally like the big thing, and you have massive turnout of people. But I do wonder whether we could just start putting on some stuff where the local people can just come and play FIFA competitively on the big screen in that conference space, you know, and just start small, you know, and just kind of get the space used for stuff like that. Because I just think, again, you'll be drawing a different audience. I mean, the people that I know who play FIFA, I prefer so-called e-football now, but anyway, that's another story. But in Winchester, where I my mainly work, you know, we've got a local pub that does like a retro games night, does really well with the students, just because they want to come and just play some games, you know. And I kind of feel that no one is necessarily taking that seriously, and I know that you've mentioned it, so I'm kind of saying, can we take that seriously? Can we start small? All we've got to do is get a PlayStation 5 and hook it into that TV, surely.
Yeah, pretty much as simple as that. So it's one of those sort of easy hanging fruits, but there are also several hundred of those. So yes, we will do it in 2023. I want to do a sort of little launch event, probably alongside some players, so Player X can come and play with Mary or Johnny from down the road, enter a little competition, and, you know, get a bit of social presence off there. And then, yeah, ultimately have someone that's representing our brand and our club and our crest in a variety of sport games, obviously predominantly with FIFA, but not exclusively.
Yeah, no, great. I mean, I know that obviously the Great Britain esports team has done really well in general, and they've got and also they have a good reputation for being for the well-being of the players, actually, because that's something that's obviously been of a concern in esports. So yeah, if you can make any inroads to the GB esports team, I think that might be a route at least to get some of those, because you kind of if you get the you've got the an AFC Wimbledon player, that's going to bring a certain type of people and think it's exciting. If you get someone from the esports GB team, that might bring other people. So yeah, great. No, thanks so much.
That's where it comes back to the influencers as well. If you can get a 17-year-old influencer that lives in Merton that talks about these things, people will come down and watch him. It's not something I would do, but people will if you get the right product, right person, right time, right location.
No, yeah. I totally agree. It's not. It's also not something I would do. I don't tend to want to watch people playing games, but I know that it's so massive.
Sounds like, Adam, you've got a job on there, mate. Bit of research for you.
Yeah,
Danny can't do it all. That's one for you. Before everybody else jumps, somebody else might want to jump in, but I have a list of little quiz for you, Danny, but I don't know if anybody else wants to jump in with us some more serious questions before I test you on your Wimbledon knowledge.
I was just going to ask if he's in. Are you enjoying it? Is it
loving it?
I know it's a difficult new job. I mean, it's obviously a lot of work, but is it enjoyable? Because most jobs, if it's fun, it's going to be does itself.
Yeah, I get out of bed every morning. So I live in about 2 miles away from the ground. I say live renting somewhere 2 miles away from the ground. So being away from my two kids, soon to be three, and my wife is tough. I won't admit I've only been home twice in 5 weeks. But that aside, absolutely loving it. Love the people, love the volunteers. The board's great, staff are great, fans are great, players are great. We've just got a lot to do to make the whole thing great.
Sounded like everything was great. Anyway, on to questions. So this is a four question quiz on Wimbledon, which is very simple. Just
bear in mind, Niall has not passed this quiz by any of us, so it's likely that none of us will know the answer to any of these quiz questions.
Well, I would be confident, right, that all of you will know the answer to these questions, right? Apart from Adam, who never gets any of these questions right, because Mark, you still got the numbers at the end, I'm assuming. But like, right, so this is an easy one because you're basically sitting underneath a sign of it most times, right? What was the first name of Wimbledon? What were we first called?
The club when formed.
When formed. What was the first name Wimbledon were called when formed?
So without giving it away, how many on this group know the answer? All right, Burke.
So just for the people who can't, because you don't see the video of it, there are six of us on this call, including Danny. Five people put their hands up. And Danny, who was sitting underneath a big, huge sign of the map of the family map of how Wimbledon's names were, on Saturday, I saw him there, sitting there. So it's behind his head is this big thing with a big logo saying the name of this.
Yeah, it's behind. The point is it was behind him. So that's not fair, is it?
My God, this. And I thought this was the easy
old
question.
Centrals. I got there.
Well done. Right.
Got there.
Okay. The second thing, this is probably a little bit more tricky. But again, I suspect I'm getting it 5 out of 6. Right. Wimbledon won the FA Cup in 1988. Famously, in the tunnel, Vinnie Jones shouted something to the Liverpool players. Do you know what he shouted? Well, it depends if you want the real thing rather than what was described as after. So I'll do the three different versions of it, but I'll just see if you can get anywhere even remotely close.
Pretty much that he would headbutt someone if they'd misbehaved.
Not far wrong. Out of everybody else, does everybody else know the answer to this? Hands up. Adam, you don't. Martin, you must know. Martin, no?
It's not broadcastable, is it?
Yeah, well, okay. It was Yidaho, which is actually an abbreviation for in the hole. because his intention was to rip off, I can't remember which player's head it was, and spit in the hole. That was what
Dalglish comes.
Dalglish, was it? Right, so that was Yidaho.
Nice.
I remember that. I know that one now you've said it, obviously, but I don't know what the rest are. I'm sure they're very rude.
That was the one. Right, okay. So the next thing is, what is significant about the phrase, all I want to do is watch football, and who said it?
I don't know who said it. I actually like the line because it's pretty much true most of the time. No, don't. Come on.
Right, okay. That was... Oh, go on. I'll let Alex answer.
That was Chris Stewart.
What day? What day?
In Wimbledon Theatre.
No. No, fail. Not Wimbledon Theatre.
Wimbledon Community Centre, 30th of May, 2002.
All right. Yeah, 2 days 45. After.
Sorry, that's a bit too...
Were you there, Martin?
No. Just heard about it.
Mark, were you all there?
No, I was in Germany working.
Right. For Danny's benefit, Chris was presenting the meeting when we formed AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And he put the mic down, went out off the stage and just stood with the rest of the fans and said, I'm sick of fighting this for a year. We've done everything we can. They're not listening. They want to build a supermarket. I just want to watch some football.
There you go.
And that probably converted enough people who were worried and concerned and thought, will it be the same?
That's it. Nice. So it's a legendary speech. And the very last question, right? Danny Kedwell walking legend. Up. Legend. Those of you who don't know, Danny will at one point admit who his team he actually supports in, but I won't drop that into him because that was unfair to anybody know that he might like Gillingham, because that would be wrong for me to mention that. But anyway, Danny Kedwell, penalty shootout, Luton Town. He turns round. He's about to take the kick to send us into the Football League on penalty shootouts. He turns to the rest of the players. What is the phrase he says to the rest of the players at that moment? Does he say, this is our time, this is our destiny calling, or this is how it feels to be lonely?
Having met Danny a few times, the third one.
That's very unfair, Niall. The second and the third one, Danny, are lyrics from 90s pop songs.
Oh, fell for that one, cool. I don't know.
You did fall for that one, because that's exactly why the rest of us were going. It was This Is Our Time, which coincidentally is a great book and is available. All good things there, written by me. But, you know, just saying that, with Danny.
Right, we're in all good bookshops.
Did you write that one, Niall, or did we help you with it? I can't remember.
I think we helped you, Niall.
May have done.
I think we wrote more than Niall did at times.
Yeah, so, whatever.
It seemed like that, anyway.
Bestseller. Anyway, there you go. So, Danny, out of your quiz, out of four of them, you've got nothing.
That's poor. That is poor.
So,
I got all one of us, close, didn't I?
One close. Was that the one where you guessed this Jimmy is how Jones, it feels to be lonely?
I think we should be rather kinder towards our managing director, who has lots of things on his plate. Thank you very much, Mr. soon to be ex Donstrass board member, Mr. Niall Cooper.
Thank you, Mark. Soon to be Don's Trust board member, as we overlap, Mark.
Yeah, thanks. Don't let the door shut on the way out. Slam on the way out. I had one final question for Danny, and then we'll wrap everything up and let the poor man have an evening. We really, really appreciate all the time you've given us, Danny, tonight. My simple question, and I appreciate it hasn't started yet, but we've got a new head of football operations, Craig Cope, I believe is the gentleman's name. Coming from Solihull Moors. I don't know that we've ever had an official head of football operations / director of football, whatever the appropriate title is. So how do you envisage how you'll be working with him? Where does the buck stop and so on? And I appreciate, obviously, he's going to be really beneficial for JJ and his coaching team as well.
Yeah, first off, we're for a vigorous recruitment process for us to have Craig. Met with Craig now a few times, unofficially and officially. And all joke apart, Craig is, he's a good egg, knows his football. And that sounds obvious for someone who's going to come in and be in, charge of those things, but really got some great connections and roots across the country. So often these people just, if they're in Birmingham, that's their connection area in the West Midlands. But he really has got roots across this area of London itself. and across the Midlands and the North. So he's really built, for a young person, really built a good network of knowing what's out there. I think he's going to be fantastic. I'll work with him on a day-by-day, side-by-side basis, both reporting into Mick and the board, which is exactly the same model had at Lake Norham with myself and Martin Ling, who was director of football. Worked brilliantly. We bounce ideas off each other, share frustrations with each other, often solve the other person's ideas, and basically work together to make sure the culture we've got at the training ground is the same culture at the stadium, of one of collaboration, communication, and bringing all those together at the same time. Want to make sure that I provide him the best backdrop he can have in terms of the facilities at the training ground, and that the team provide that, and vice versa, that ultimately we're in this to try and reduce our losses, to be able to further invest and to make his job, Johnny's job, Terry's job, Rob's job easier by having a bigger, more competitive budget, albeit it does seem to be doing very well with what we currently got, but you know, always can areas for improvement. So that's the mission. And yeah, genuinely looking forward to working with Craig come the start of January. He's Midlands based, but he's also, like me, going to be residing down in the southwest of this lovely city.
Fabulous. Glad to hear it. Good news indeed. We are very used to signing obscure 19-year-olds from Fulham reserves at 11:55 on the last day of the transfer window. So if we could sign anyone a little earlier than that, I think we'd all be quite happy, generally speaking. Okay, I was just going to actually wrap things up there and ask Danny one final thing as to whether or not, not that we are in any way representative of our fan base, because we're five blokes of a certain age and a certain background and so on and so forth. But do you have any kind of burning issues right now that you're really keen on getting the sort of testing the water and the temperature of the fan base right now? Things you don't know that you'd like to know?
Yeah, I think the match day experience. I think, yeah, we're doing really well on getting bums on seats and getting bums on seats to stay and come back. And clearly results with Johnny and the guys have helped massively. There's nothing worse than when you put all these marketing plans in place for new people to come, especially new families, and the experience is rubbish and the football's rubbish. So we think we've got a long way to go to get the food and drink offering to where it wants to be. But for me, it's about making that match day experience, that final mile from Haydens Road or from whatever transport network you're coming from, to really feel like I've arrived. I know I'm here at Plough Lane. We've got a long way to go. So tomorrow we're working with various groups to basically write, what can we do to make that match day experience? What themed days can we do? So one of them we're going to be is that you can, if you're a junior, you can basically be involved. One person will read the team shout out. One person will be flag bearer. All that sort of stuff of basically taking on match day duty. That's just one idea. Celebrating the local community is another one. But you know, having almost like a festival of light and sound that we're doing that. And it's effectively making every match day different, but at the same time being consistent with our offering, so that if Mark's ordering a burger and a pint, that burger and pint is on time, it's sparkling hot, and the beer's ice cold. Get them right, bit of acoustic guitars around various places, we'll get the place buzzing, get people in early, get people staying, and ultimately helping the tills roll for all the reasons we've just given.
Great news indeed. I mean, one of the first initiatives that obviously you put in place is the all tickets for a fiver for the Stockport game. I mentioned this to a couple of colleagues at work. I've got three colleagues from work coming down, and I tried to get four seats together for us to sit there, and I did it on Thursday or Friday last week, and obviously the offer's only been out for a few days. I think I basically got the last place in the whole of the stadium where there was more than one individual seat available. So there seems to be about...
It's gone really well. And our main remit now is to engage with every single one of those people that's a new fan. So if you've bought three tickets and they're new fans, we want to engage with them. So there's a number of initiatives we're launching, because I want to be able to track to say, right, Mark bought Tom with him, and Tom's not been to a game since he had the offer. What can we do to get him in for the next game? Or he bought Bob, and Bob's been to the last three matches. How can we get him buying a half season card? It's that journey of and the ladder to put our new fans, first time fans up it. Because if we do that, we'll get more season card holders in the long term.
Great news indeed. Look, a lot of stuff you told us tonight is really interesting, really useful stuff we haven't heard before, stuff the fans haven't heard before. So that's really positive to hear. And we really, as I said before, are grateful for you joining us tonight and grateful for you giving such thorough and useful answers. I'm going to wrap it all up now because we've been talking for far too long, taking far too much of your time. I'm going to wrap it up in the normal way that we do with our little silly numbers quiz, which is where we give everybody an individual number. Appreciate that Martin and Danny wouldn't have done this before, but it's very simple. We give the individual a number, and that number should relate to something either Wimbledon-related or World Cup-related, potentially, that they can just take a quick guess at. And if anyone else thinks they know the answer, then they can jump in as well. So we'll start off with Danny with, I think, a relatively straightforward one. Danny's number is 34. What is the question to which 34 is the answer?
Anything to do with Wimbledon or...
It's actually to do with you personally and Wimbledon.
To do with me personally?
Yes.
34 days since I started.
Correct. Correct. Bang on, straight away. You see? And they tell me
34, number is the number of clubs in fair game.
Yeah, yeah, but that's not the answer. He got the answer straight off, so leave me alone. Thank you very much. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't get that as well.
Apologies.
Don't humour him. Martin's answer. Martin's number, because Martin has the number four, we'll jump in there. Martin's number is number 5, and this is not at all football related, unless you're a fan of South African football teams.
You know, I was going to say 5 times Brazil won the World Cup and they're winning 4-0 at the moment, but...
That's too easy.
Don't know. Humour me.
5.
Sadly, Martin was complaining about a certain band I went to see in concert.
Oh.
And I went
every
to
band
see,
you go and see.
I went to see one the other day, the same the other day. 5 number ones that the Kaiser Chiefs had.
5 top 10 hits, I'll give you that.
Just don't see them, okay?
What's wrong with the Kaiser Chiefs?
Nothing, but
they're
Martin
very good
like
South African football team.
Martin, okay, Alex got that one, so we'll jump in for Alex. Alex's number is 8,832.
It can't be our highest attendance, but it must be our capacity in the ground at the moment.
This is actually relating to the World Cup, not relating to Wimbledon.
Is that the amount of total number of pints of Budweiser that they've sold throughout the entire tournament?
Only in Plough Lane whilst we're doing our activities. No, it's not. No, this relates to a certain international team, actually.
Oh, Danny's going to guess.
The number of empty seats in the Brazil game, because it seems to be half empty.
No. 8,000
yellow cards that Uruguay got in the World Cup.
Is it the amount of over the capacity in the Brazil game that's playing right now? Have they announced it as 8,832 more people than actually in the capacity?
What was Alex's rant about last week?
Is it the amount of deaths by constructor workers in Qatar?
Yeah, I was more worried that you're going to say that's the amount of dead people that are buried under that stadium, but there we go.
No, we want to be positive on this pod.
Oh, God, right, okay. Amount of drums by Senegal.
Okay, I'll put you out of your misery. It's the number of air miles flown by England's World Cup team during qualification for Qatar.
I thought I got that one.
Adam's number is 430.
Is it related to Wimbledon and the World Cup?
It relates to you personally and something that was announced yesterday.
Oh, I know the answer to that. Oh, Adam, come on. Adam, how can you not know this?
Something that was announced yesterday and relates to me personally. Oh, for goodness sake, it's a number of blimmin' votes, isn't it? For goodness sake. Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Sorry, that was a bit cheeky.
Rub that right in, yeah. I was 8th, okay?
How many people got elected, Adam?
7.
So that next time. One more time, mate. One more go and you'll be there.
We shall see.
You doubled the number of votes from last time.
Yeah. No.
You're the Scotland of the Don's Trust Board.
No, because Scotland will never get qualified for anything.
Harsh. Okay, finally, Niall's number is 1,371.
1,371. I don't know. The distance from Land's End to John O'Groats is about that, isn't it?
No. This is you personally and football-related.
Me personally?
Yeah.
Is it the number of followers I have on Twitter? Don't know, because you come up with that sort of stuff. 1,000.
No, we've done that one before.
Is it Mike and Bowes?
If this was done now, then maybe you'd get less than 1,371.
Was it my combined votes in the last two Donstrasse elections?
No, it was not just combined. It was last year's Donstrasse election, apparently. Okay,
I got 1,371 votes.
Apparently so, yeah.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Obviously, if we stood again, Danny, you'd get about 371 and not get elected, but that's another story entirely. We've rattled on
That was really cruel to mention both of those in front of Adam, wasn't it? That's not particularly nice, is it?
Slight difference between the two, slight difference.
Yeah, that's not fair. Is it the amount of cruel jokes, cruel things Mark has said today? 1,371, is that it?
Counting.
Harsh.
Yeah.
But entirely fair. We would love to thank everybody who's been on the pod. Great to see Martin joining us for the first time. Thank you to Alex. Thank you to Adam. Thank you to Niall. And most especially, a massive thank you to Danny Macklin for joining us on the pod. Hopefully not the last time you're able to join us, Danny. We really look forward to seeing all the different initiatives you're bringing in at the football club. And obviously, as soon as you came in, the results on the pitch turned positive as well. So fingers crossed that's all going in the right direction.
Danny, I hope you also get to see your family a bit more as well, because you need to make time for that, because nothing is more important than that.
No, you're right. We're doing one real small side point here. So staff have worked so hard. I just want to bring recognition to why we're doing this. So on the 23rd, I'm booting everyone out. And with the exception of preparation for the 26th and those that have to work the away matches at Colchester and Sutton, everyone else is getting that time off. We'll be checking emails, but yes, it's gone down so well. Staff are burnt out. This has been one heck of a year with early stages of defeat after defeat. It takes its toll on the players, it takes down on staff as well, and it's just little things like that hopefully can recognise how hard these guys have worked and give everyone a break with their family, myself included. And we go again on the 3rd of January with a huge amount to do in 2023.
I think all of us in the pod would echo that. All the experience we've had with the staff that you've got there, they're brilliant. They're putting a really hard shift and they're not always as get the credit they deserve. So Danny, I think that's a brilliant initiative and I think they all really deserve it. We all think they've done brilliant. I think all of us would agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. Stuff.
More power to your L by Danny in that regard, and anything we as supporters or on the pod or whatever can do to support club initiatives, then just let us know and we will have your back, as they say. For now, thank you very much to everybody for joining us on today's pod, and we'll see you next week. Take care now.
Take care. Up the Dons.
Up the Dons.